What does it mean to be a leader in cancer care? At Davis Hospital Cancer Center, we know. It means a team of experts providing exceptional care using advanced technology and treatment plans designed specifically for each of our patients. And our nurse patient navigators are here to make your experience convenient and comfortable. To find out how our expert team could help you, contact us at davishospital.org. The Cancer Center at Davis Hospital and Medical Center, a Steward family hospital in partnership with physician owners.
There are those who say,
leave well enough alone.
If it isn't broken, don't fix it.
You don't mess with success.
While others have something quite different to say. The Lexus RX, with dynamic handling and available 12.3-inch touchscreen, it's the best-selling luxury crossover of all time. Experience amazing at your Lexus dealer. Click the banner to discover more.
What's up, everybody? This is Isaac Weishaupt. You're listening to the Conspiracy Theories and Unpopular Culture podcast, and we've got a very special show for everybody tonight. This is going to be the monumental first special guest ever on the show. Besides my normal co-host, not to say he's not special, but this is a specialty treat we've got going. We're going to be talking to none other than Sandman, who is the host of the Parareality radio show, and I've got him on the line here. So Sandman, maybe give us a little introduction to who you are, tell us a little bit about your show.
Yeah, no problem. First of all, I'd like to say thank you for having me here on your podcast. I've been looking forward to talking to you for several days now, so I appreciate you having me here as a guest.
Thanks for coming on. You know, in case anyone on the show here isn't familiar with what went down, I was on the Parareality radio previously, and you know, now we're kind of exchanging favors, and he's gonna show up on my show, so I'm happy to have you on here.
Yeah, this is kind of a different situation for me, being the interviewee as opposed to the interviewer. So
this is gonna be my first interview ever. So.
Oh, sweet! So nothing can go wrong then.
No, absolutely not. What could go wrong?
Exactly. Well, I'll tell you your audience a little bit about me, since probably none of them
are. Yeah, yeah. Tell us a little bit more for people who aren't familiar with your material.
Yeah, yeah. I host a I'm a fellow podcaster. I've actually been hosting a version of a radio show / podcast since about 2004. I took a little break for about 2.5 years there, and then got back into it a little while ago. The name of my show is Parareality Radio, and I discuss all kinds of things a mysterious, unknown nature. I'll talk about anything paranormal, ghosts, UFOs, aliens, conspiracy theories, unsolved mysteries, stuff like that. It's kind of like the if you're familiar with Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie, previously hosted by Art Bell. It's I call it kind of a knockoff show. It's the poor man's version of Coast to Coast AM, and been doing it, like I said, since 2004. And you can hear me on Spreaker. That's Spreaker, Spreaker.com. That's where I host my show. Or you can go to my website, which is Parareality.com, and you can listen to it from my website. So that's the 30 second introduction.
I saw your website because this will segue right into what we're going to talk about tonight. Tonight we're going to be covering just various aspects of World War II and Nazi stuff, and what kind of, I wasn't sure how, you know, what angle you wanted to take, because if you go on Parareality.com, where Sandman hosts all of his stuff, you can, you know, look through the archives. He's got a ton on you know, Hitler stuff and paranormal connections with the Nazis and, you know, amongst other stuff. You've got ghost stuff. I mean, this is really a good radio show, and especially for, you know, those of us that don't want to pay for the coast-to-coast subscription, this is like an excellent alternative.
Yeah, well, thanks. Yeah. Yeah, totally free to listen to. Doesn't cost you a dime. The name of the show, it can be kind of misleading because it has, you know, para-reality in it. And I kind of come up with the term para-reality. I don't know if anyone ever been using it before, but I kind of come up with a term of it back in 2004. And it kind of is a little misleading, like I said, because people think, oh, it's paranormal stuff. And it's not really just that. I mean, yeah, I do talk about some stuff like that, but mainly to me, the word paranormal means anything other than the normal. And so para-reality means anything other than the current reality. So, you know, I'll talk about anything and everything on the show. I've even done some stuff on religion and stuff like that. And that always proves to be a very controversial topic, as you can guess. That, go ahead.
You're based out of Nashville, is that right?
Yes, I am based out of Nashville, Tennessee. That's where I host the show from my little modest studio, the Parareality Radio Studios here in Nashville, Tennessee.
Okay, cool. And are you an avid fan of the Elvis Presley conspiracies? I don't know a lot about it. I just know that, you know, he was in the National Choir and all that stuff for years, so.
Yeah. Well, there are a few things about, I don't know, number one, a lot about the Elvis Presley conspiracy theory. So I guess the short answer would be no, I'm not really big into that. But what I do know is that like his name is misspelled on his tombstone. And of course, you know, if you read the National Enquirer, he's been cited everywhere in America, you know.
That's true. His name is misspelled on his own tombstone?
Yes, his name is Elvis Aaron Presley, and I believe they spelled his middle name Aaron with two A's, and it's only supposed to be one. But don't quote me on that because I don't really know. But I think that's what it is. Yeah. But you know, even if he didn't die, let's say he faked his own death, why would he be seen all over the United States still looking the same as he died in 1970, whatever, you know?
That's true.
Surely he would disguise himself, you know, and he's probably, if he didn't die then, he's probably dead now. So either way, I think he's dead.
Yeah, that's probably a safe bet.
Yeah.
All right. Well, yeah, I thought I'd throw that out there since I know like, Nashville's gotta be somewhere in the ballpark close to Memphis somewhere, but
yeah, about 3 hours down the road.
Oh, wow, okay. All right, well, a little further than I thought.
Oh, no, Tennessee is not a, it's a wide state. It's long from the east-west axis, but very short in stature on the north-south axis, so.
Okay, all right, well, cool. Well, let's get into the meat of what we want to talk about tonight.
All right.
We're going to cover, you know, some World War II stuff. Sandman's a pretty knowledgeable cat on this kind of stuff, so I've got a few kind of rough bullet points of just some stuff that's of interest to me. I used to read this stuff fairly avidly until the website started steering my interest towards music and pop culture, so I'm probably gonna say some ignorant stuff that's probably incorrect tonight, but I've got some rough ideas of some stuff we could talk about, but okay. I wanted to, you know, open the floor up and see if there's any particular areas of expertise you wanted to particularly talk about tonight, maybe, or, you know, maybe something you're more passionate about.
I have been I've always been fascinated by history. I've been like a history buff. I probably should have been a college history professor or something, and, you know, hindsight 2020. But I've always been really interested in history. And when I was growing up, my mother, for whatever reason, was very interested in the World War II era and the war itself. And that kind of rubbed off on me as a kid. And she had some books and stuff, and as I was too young, you know, to understand what they were about, but I would read, you know, flip through them and read through them, and I'd ask her questions about stuff. And she kind of was, like I said, not fascinated for whatever reason with World War II, and that kind of rubbed off on me. And I've read a lot of books about World War II, watched a lot of documentaries. I've read a lot of stuff about Adolf Hitler and the Nazis and Heinrich Himmler. And my interest has just kind of, you know, continued to grow from childhood. And if you read or study anything about Hitler and Nazi Germany, you'll come to find out that there's this whole aspect of Nazism that was based upon the occult. And the more you really kind of look into it, the more you see that really everything was kind of occult based, and they were trying to establish their own religion, and they were trying to write their own history based upon these god-awful, foolish, outlandish things that they sent special teams all around the world to try to dig up stuff. And it's very fascinating. And all of this kind of led to secret projects and experiments. And ultimately, in the end, when Hitler supposedly killed himself, there's a big question mark there. Did he really kill himself in that bunker back in April 30th, 1945? Sure. Did he really do it? Or what, did he use one of his many doppelgangers? There's never been an actual body that was produced.
I saw a thing on, and here we go with the inaccuracy, but I think I saw it on History Channel or something where they found what were supposedly Hitler's bones or his skull or something, and mm-hmm. then they, you know, and they've had it all these years, and I think they did some DNA testing, and then they're like, oh, wait, that's not Hitler.
Right. They had... Yeah, Isaac, they had found a skull fragment that supposedly had a bullet hole in it, and they said, well, this is Hitler's. And the when I say they, I'm speaking about the Russians. And the Russians had kept it in some archive for, I don't know, 60 years, 50 years, something like that. And finally somebody examined it and did some DNA testing, and it was actually the skull fragment of a 40-year-old woman. And they have no idea who this person is. And if that's not Hitler's skull fragment, then where is his body?
Yeah, and I've talked about this on my website, about the like occult holiday traditions. And, you know, as you're aware, Hitler supposedly committed suicide on the Beltane holiday.
Yes.
Which is like a big sacrificial holiday for occult themes. So... Mm-hmm. You know, maybe he did that as a sign for the other occult followers to kind of get the message, like, oh, you know, maybe he didn't do this, or maybe he did it in the anticipation of satisfying some occult deity.
Yes, exactly. And a big argument can be made for that, but there's no, as far as I know, there's no definitive proof that Hitler was as embedded into the occult and pagan practice as Heinrich Himmler was. He did have, you know, these strange beliefs and all of that, but I think Himmler was more into the occult and the paganism aspect of Nazi Germany than Hitler was. Hitler just kind of let him run with it. He was a little bit busy being Hitler. But there is a strong argument that can be made that, you know, he was sacrificing himself to some god, some deity, to maybe try to help bring about the Fourth Reich. You know, that's always something, of course, that's going to be thrown out there that will probably never be answered. And you know, and of course, you know, it could all just be coincidence too. Like I said, he wasn't as much into this occult and pagan stuff as Himmler was. So it could just be that it was a freaking coincidence. But, you know, once again, we'll probably never know the answers to this.
Yeah, I was watching I've seen so many of these shows that they blend together, but they were saying that Himmler had some kind of a cult guide, spiritual guide, and this guy was like schizophrenic and had all these like strange oddities about him, and I guess this guy was like his main confidant that helped him come up with some of these ideas he had, and it also talked about how they were trying to rewrite history, and that's why they were snagging all the artwork in Europe. Like, they had some crazy amount of, like, they had stolen like 25% of the whole, all of the European historical art collection or something like that while they were pillaging all the cities and whatnot.
Yeah, they were really big. The hierarchy of, or the higher ups, Hitler and Himmler and Goering and Goebbels, I can never pronounce his name, Goebbels. They were all big time art thieves, for lack of a better term. They collected just, God, I forgot how many, you know, hundreds of thousands of pieces of art between them. And they would, when the fall was evident and there was absolutely no doubt, okay, we're losing this, they actually took all of their artwork and hid them in caves in the outskirts of Germany, somewhere between, I think, Germany and Austria. It might have even been over the border in Austria, but I can't recall. But the movie that just came out, I believe it was last year, called The Monuments Men, was actually based upon a true group of soldiers who were tasked to go in and recover these pieces of art, which they did. Now, I haven't seen the movie, so I don't know how true to life it is, how accurate or anything like that it is, but it is based upon, you know, something that actually did happen in World War II.
I don't want to put you on the spot. I think,
go ahead.
I think Joseph Goebbels and Adolf Hitler, I want to say both of them had some kind of creative art background. Like, the one wanted to write books and the other was like a painter or something before they got into all this Nazi stuff, which it seems like a strange thing to go from an art kind of sophisticated type person to, you know, savage occult Nazi killer, you know.
Well, Hitler was a failed artist. He tried to I can't remember, the name escapes me right now. There was a prestigious art school in Germany that he tried to enter, but he failed the entrance exam, and he actually, and this was right before World War I, and he was making a living by selling his watercolors, and he would do postcards and stuff like that and just sell them on the street, and that's how he was kind of eking his living by. And when World War I broke out, he saw this as an opportunity for him to make some money and actually become something. So he tried to join the Austrian army, because he was not German, he was Austrian. And he tried to join the Austrian army, and they were like, dude, you are too unfit for duty, and turned him down. So the German people were taking anyone and everyone. So he went over and joined the German army, and that's where his love for Germany, that's where the spark started. And then he got to see how they were on the battlefield and was just enamored with the German soldier. And just, it really, really lit a fire. And from the time he got out of the army, he was actually injured in battle, I believe, by a mustard gas attack, and was temporarily blinded. And he was in a hospital when the war ended. And he actually blamed the Weimar government for surrendering, and thought that they were weak and needed to be replaced. And that's where he started thinking, well, maybe I can do something about this. And he was actually retained by the army to spy on the National or what was the forerunner of the National Socialist Party or the Nazis. He was actually, they would meet in beer halls, and he would go and spy on them and write notes and take it back to his superior and let him know, hey, this is what's going on. And eventually he drank the Kool-Aid and said, you know what, I want to be a part of this party, and quickly took over, and the rest, as they say, is history.
That's crazy. I didn't know all that.
Yeah.
Sounds like when you said, he was over with the German soldiers, and he was kind of enamored and impressed by these soldiers. Like, I wonder if there was any kind of ironic homosexual thoughts he might have had. Yeah.
Ooh.
just a thought I had about, well, wouldn't that be silly? Hitler was kind of gay this whole time. But
Well, you know, there is a an argument out there. There's a belief that he could have been gay because he was never really seen with a woman except for two occasions. Eva Braun, which is probably the most famous, but he had a niece that he actually. This was when he became chancellor of Germany. He had a niece that was, well, it might have been right before he became chancellor, but he was big in the political scene at this point in time. He had a niece that came with and to live with him, and he actually became quite possessive of her, and there's rumors that they had an inappropriate relationship, and she eventually killed herself because of him. So
that's crazy, huh?
Yeah, so, you know, we don't really know what kind of relationship they had other than that he was very possessive of her. So, you know, that only two women was he ever really kind of publicly seen with. And, neither one of them were, considered to be his quote unquote girlfriend because he wanted to have the image that he was married to Germany. So, he did not want anyone to know that he had any type of love life. As far as the German people were concerned, he was married to Germany, he was celibate, and he had no time for women. So any kind of romantic relationship he had was always kept very, very secret. Just a small inner circle of people ever knew about it. But because of that, I think is where the homosexual rumors come about, because, you know, he was never really seen publicly with women.
That's interesting. But he was into theosophy, right? Isn't that right? He was a theosophist type, or did they use some kind of weird blend of Nordic paganism and?
They used a weird blend of everything. A lot of Nordic paganism. Yes. When I say they, I'm referring to a generic term or general term of the Nazis, but they pulled stuff from everywhere that would kind of suit their agenda and kind of made a mishmash of everything and said, here, this is us. This is where we come from.
And they were trying to basically rewrite history to say that was the factual truth was, you know, the German bloodline was this.
Superior Aryan race.
The gods of Atlantis or something, right?
The gods of Atlantis. He actually sent people out to try to find Atlantis. They were basically trying to rewrite history so that they could prove that the German people were this superior Aryan race. And, like I said, it's the way that they did it was... if you go back and just really look at it on the surface, it looks really hokey and stupid. It's like, I can't believe that they were trying to do all this. But if you really dig deep into it, what they were doing, man, was just this massive undertaking. And it was actually working because they lied and made it work, you know, and the German people were just swallowing it.
I think part of the fascination with the Nazis in World War II is the ability of this group to take things to the level that they took it it really is amazing. Like just the logistics of, you know, I watched a documentary about the about Auschwitz and the whole logistics of, like, okay, how can we efficiently, you know, kill all these people and then dispose of the remains and, like, you know, it's weird stuff that you don't even think of, like how do you even do that? Like, they had this whole, like, experimentation where they were figuring out, okay, what's the best way, you know, the cheapest way we can kill these people and in mass numbers.
Oh, yeah. They had, you know, when it came to the final solution, they actually had a meeting that was a secret meeting that they had a bunch of the top Nazi officials in. Hitler was not there. But they had this secret meeting. How are we going to do this? And they figured out how they were going to do it. And it when you look at it, you know, there's really the German people had to know what was going on. And there's not a whole lot of people that did not have some sort of hand in this, whether it was, you know, the people who made the decision were going to kill these people to the people who was, you know, shooting them or hitting the button on the gas chamber or whatever, all the way down to the guy that was driving the train. You know, the engineer, he knew where these people were going. He knew what was happening, but he didn't do anything about it. You know, he had a job to do and he did it. And somewhere there was somebody in some government office shuffling paperwork that had to do with it. You know, so there's a lot of things involved in that, and the German people just kind of turned a blind eye to it. And another thing that they did is that they kind of were the forerunners of our privatized prison system. I know in your new book you talk about the privatized prison system and some conspiracies and stuff behind it. Uh-huh. And one of the things that that the Nazis did that I don't think they're really given credit for, and that sounds kind of strange saying, you know, you're going to credit this evil group of people for something. But one of the things they kind of did was develop this idea of privatized prisons and the government turning a profit off of prisoners, because they had all of these Jewish people in these camps, and they had this big industrial complex that was churning out, you know, tanks and guns and planes and bombs and all this other sorts of stuff for the war, plus everything else that the German nation needed to just to live off every day. So they would take all of these concentration camp and these death camp people, and they would lease them out to these companies. And the companies would pay the Nazis untold amounts of money for these slaves, is basically what it was.
Yeah, going off of your idea that it's weird that we have to say, you know, statements like, you know, the Nazis contributed this to society, but they actually did a lot.
Oh yeah,
a lot of stuff like military strategy.
Mm-hmm.
There was like, you know, tactics of stuff like, and then they had you know, like Hitler designed the Volkswagen Beetle.
He did.
Right?
People don't know that, but he did. He designed it, yeah.
Yeah, and then I read that, I guess, before the Nazi Party, the idea of, and I don't know if I believe this one, I think this one's a little too wild, but the idea of premarital sex was more taboo before the Nazi Party, because that was one of the benefits you got for being a part of the Hitler Youth was you were allowed to have premarital sex. And, you know, I'm sure people had premarital sex before the Nazis, but
I guess
the idea of it being normalized and talked about was something that didn't exist before the Nazis.
Yeah. Well, speaking of Nazis and sex, Himmler, who was the head of the SS, the Schufenstaffen, the guys in black with the death's head skull on their hats and everything. He went to certain cemeteries all over the country and would somehow, he had like psychics or something with him, but he would go to these certain cemeteries where there were like supposedly like great men or great Germans buried or whatever. And he believed that if you had sex in a cemetery and conceived a child, that the spirit of these great people who were buried there would inhabit the child, and the child would be, you know, this great individual or whatever. So he actually encouraged his SS troops and their wives to have sex in cemeteries to try to conceive children.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yep. That's another probably little known fact there about them. And
then one most everybody knows is we snagged a bunch of their scientists and operates in paperclip.
Yeah.
Werner von Braun gave us one of the rockets that we eventually used in NASA.
Yep.
To get to the moon, I think.
Got to the moon because of von Braun, exactly. Yeah.
It's crazy. Like, people want to talk about how this idea of a Fourth Reich isn't possible, but I'm like, dude, I don't know, man. Like, they did a lot of stuff that we still...
They did do a lot of stuff.
Still around.
And,
I don't know.
You know, depending upon what your belief system is, you know, there's a lot of people who believe that there is a secret Nazi Antarctic base buried underneath the ice that's still operational today. That's one of the topics of one of the shows that I did, one of the episodes of my show that I did over the summer. I did this summer series, which I think is what you've kind of been referring to a little bit here, about the Nazi paranormal connection. And I did a episode about the secret Nazi Antarctic base, and I did another one about did Hitler die, and I did also one about this weapon or device that they built called Daglaka, which translates to the bell, which was it was overseen by one of the SS generals, one of the higher SS generals. It was he was a lieutenant general. His name was Hans Kammler, and he was in charge of advanced weapons development in Germany, including the ME-262 jets, the V-2 rocket, and things like Daglaka. And he had just a ton of duties, like operational control over the V-1, V-2 bombardments of London and Antwerp and Paris. And he was responsible for the design and construction oversight of the world's first bomb-proof underground aircraft and missile factory sites.
They had a recent... You're watching the Giorgio Tsoukalos show In Search of Aliens?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, they had a whole show on...
Mm-hmm.
I love his over-pronunciation of everything, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, you pronounce Die Glocke.
Yeah, Die Glocke.
Yeah, that was pretty interesting, to see that some of those sites are still there just
mm-hmm. Yeah,
for anyone to walk up to.
Kammler's, one of his... In the end, he was in command and control and coordination of all the Third Reich's secret weapons research. And this was when they were developing Die Glocke. And some people think that it's a time travel device. Some people think that it's a spaceship of some kind. And some people think this is even been described as like a looking glass into the past, where you could see into the past. Now, why you would want to see into the past, I don't know. You know, what good is it going to do you? Because whatever has happened has already happened. But I don't know. But at the end of the war, everything that had to do with that project, all the plans and the drawings, the device itself, and including Lieutenant General Hans Kammler, they all disappeared. And no one knows what the hell happened to them. And it's been speculated that they actually, one of the reasons why they're thinking it's a time travel device is because it was obviously bell-shaped and kind of like an acorn-type shape bell. And in 1965, something that looked just exactly like it fell out of the sky in Kecksburg, Pennsylvania, and was quickly confiscated by the U.S. government. And then all accounts of the incident was... denied, and the government said it never happened and we weren't there. So
yeah, and wasn't there one in the, I want to say it was called the Rendlesham Forest in Germany?
Yeah, there was an incident in the Rendlesham Forest in Germany, but this was not a bell-shaped object. This was more like a triangular-shaped object. But I don't I've never heard any connection of the, between the two, but you know, you never know. You never know.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's see. I wanted to ask you about Joseph Mengele, because he's the guy that was, he's the face of the Nazi Party's, you know, horrific experiments they did on human beings.
Mm-hmm.
And what I've read in passing was that the Nazis had this idea of this pure bloodline, and there's this connection that it has with theories of mind control, where Fritz Springmeier, I think he's the one that came up with this idea, but he was saying that the Nazi Party and Joseph Mengele believed that there was a certain bloodline they were saying that certain bloodlines were able to dissociate from torture better than other bloodlines because these children were subjected to all these horrific child abuse, emotional, physical, sexual, all these things.
Right.
And over time, every generation they passed down this genetic trait where everyone in this bloodline is able to dissociate from traumatic things, and they use these bloodlines, these people, to do certain things like Manchurian Candidate type stuff, where they program them to kill or do some awful thing, right?
So, want them to be a super soldier and stuff, yeah.
Yeah, and I was going to ask you, and then one of the experiments that I've read supposedly Mengele did, but I wasn't able to find this on any, like, quote-unquote legitimate scholarly site, but supposedly Mengele had this experiment called the Daisy Experiment, where he would have the children, they would, you know, put all the children in a room, and, you know, they would have a daisy, and the kids would pull the daisy petals off one at a time, and, you know, like a he loves me not thing, and if at the end they pulled the, you know, he loves me not petal, then that would mean that they would shoot the child right there in front of all the other kids. And then pass, you know, a daisy on to the next kid, and the next kid would have to do the same thing, and maybe they landed on the right number of petals, and they would get to live. And, you know, it was just like this traumatic experiment thing. And I'm wondering, have you heard anything saying to back that up?
I'm not up to speed on a lot of the stuff for Joseph Mengele. My interest in the Nazis revolves mainly around Hitler and Himmler. And what I do know about Mengele is you're right on the head with talking about, you know, the way that he thought certain people could pass their genetics down the line, like, you know, for the affinity for withstanding great pain or psychic abilities or whatever. But the Daisy thing is something that I'm not really familiar with, so I would not be even one to even talk about that, because I have no idea. I have heard of something similar to that, but I don't know. I can't remember exactly what it was. I have heard that one of the things that it might not have been Mengele, but one of the medical experiments that the Nazis did was to if a baby was born that was deformed in any way, or if it was maybe mentally retarded, or back then they used to call them things like waterhead babies and stuff. If there was ever an undesirable child, they would basically take the child away from the parents under the disguise of, we're going to give this child the best care that we can get, and the government's going to take care of it. You'll never have to worry about anything with this child again. And they would basically take the child and throw him in like an asylum somewhere, and just let him just kind of let him rot, you know.
Crazy, yeah.
I don't know.
Wild.
Yeah. And they did a whole bunch of other experiments. Mengele did some surgical experiments, you know, trying to make people taller and stronger and change their facial features, and their whole body appearance and stuff, and he just did some horrible, horrible medical experiments.
I wonder if that was maybe part of the agenda plan for Hitler to, like, maybe he had Mengele do all these experiments for body modification so that one day Hitler could just take his death and escape out and move to, like they say he lives in Argentina now or some shit
Like
that.
Yeah, yeah. It is well documented that Hitler did have a few doppelgangers in Germany. There were supposed to be total lookalikes and were actually trained to quote unquote be Hitler. And what they were designed for was not only just to, you know, die the martyr's death on the battlefield, but also it was believed that these doppelgangers would make public appearances in place of Hitler. Now, not giving any speeches or anything like that, but they would be good for public appearances or parties or meetings or briefings where Hitler wasn't expected to have that much interaction with his underlings. And as a matter of fact, there is a famous picture on the internet and out there of a guy that's dead, and it looks like Hitler, and that actually was proven to not be Adolf Hitler. It was actually one of his doppelgangers.
Okay, I'll have to look that up. Huh.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember what the guy's name was. It'll come to me in a minute. But yeah, he was photographed by the Russians when they as the Third Reich collapsed in the spring of 1945. And
I'll post it on Russia. So what I'll do with this our podcast here, I'm gonna make a post up for it. I'll post the audio streams for it, and I'll throw the picture on there. We'll find it in the meantime. We'll throw the picture on, and let me write a note on that. I'll put the picture of
Gustav Weber. That was the guy's name, Gustav Weber.
Gustav Weber.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
We'll throw it on there, and then I'm also going to throw some links on to your series that you did.
Yeah, sure.
So people can link right up there to like your Antarctica stuff or Diglocka, and you've got one on the Did Hitler Survive, that kind of stuff. But anyways, yeah. Another thing I wanted to talk to you about. Do you remember? So on our last conversation, we kind of touched the surface on Stanley Kubrick.
Oh yeah.
And to some of the people out there, if you're not familiar, I've got some posts about some symbolism of Stanley Kubrick and The Shining and Eyes Wide Shut. But there was something interesting about Kubrick was that he was a Jewish person and he married the niece of Viet Harlan, who was a famous German director who made the most notorious anti-Semitic film of all time called, Jude Seuss or something like that? Seuss the Jew? And anyways, so yeah, he was this famous director, and I think he was even, I want to say he was sent to for prison for, crimes of humanity after the, I think it was, the Nuremberg trials or whatever. So Kubrick, who was a Jewish person, married into this Nazi, direct descendant Nazi bloodline.
Wow.
And she was even in his film Paths of Glory. And she was, they stayed married for, I don't know how many years, 40 years or whatever, until he died. And part of the claim is that she told him some secrets about the Nazis' current existence and supposed Fourth Reich infiltration of America, and you name it.
Mm-hmm.
And that is one of the reasons why you see the symbolism in his films of such, like, German stuff. Like, in The Shining, he's got a, Jay Widener talks about how he's got the typewriter he uses is an Adler, German Adler, which Adler means eagle in German. And,
right.
He says that plays an important role because it's, showing these connections to Germany and the Holocaust. And, it's kind of a strange coincidence that Kubrick would be into all this kind of occult symbolism when you look at all of his films, and he was also married into this kind of Nazi bloodline. And, that's something worth looking into.
Because
I think I think Dr. Gables was the one that found this, Kubrick's wife's uncle to direct those anti-Semitic propaganda films.
You know, that was one of the ways that the Nazis would disperse their propaganda. It was one of the most widely, how else can you reach millions of people easily? Well, you make a damn movie.
Yeah, it's like they knew the importance of the entertainment. It's like in my new book, the Hip Hop Sacrifice book, I talk about some of the, like, Francis Bacon from like the 1500s time frame. He was one of the first ones that was preaching about how you could, if you wanted to really get a message out there, you had to do it through entertainment medium. And I've heard Freeman talk about how the Nazis were consulting some Disney films because they knew that the way to get propaganda out there was going that route.
Mm-hmm. And the Nazis were big time movie makers, man. They spent millions of dollars making movies over the course of their short lived lives.
Yeah, I mean for being, relatively short period of time, I mean they were busy. I mean, it just blows your mind when you start looking into this stuff and trying to figure out what happened. And, there's so many key players involved.
Well, Hitler was probably, I hate to, talk about somebody like Hitler and make it sound like I'm lading, doing accolades for the guy. And, but really he was probably the most prolific speech maker arguably that has ever been. I mean, he was just phenomenal. And if you've ever watched any clips from his speeches, I mean, you can't understand what he's saying unless you speak German, but you just look at him and you're kind of mesmerized. And that was one of the big things, has always been one of the big things as far as the occult and the paranormal aspect of that. It was, was he tapping into some unseen force, some occult deity, was he channeling something whenever he would give his speeches? And there's, given their occult nature, there's always that possibility that he was channeling some sort of deity, and letting this thing have power through him. And he never did the, at least that I know of, he never made the triangle symbol, that you talk about so much. And he never threw the satanic horns out, but he had certain gestures and stuff that he would do all the time. And they were, he would practice speaking in front of a mirror. He took speech lessons. He took acting lessons, and his every gesture that he made was timed for that specific moment in the speech at that, for that phrase or that word. And it was very sharp with his movements. If you notice, nothing was fluid with him. Everything was sharp and just, spot on. And, was he doing some sort of, channeling for something?
Because those guys were into all that occult stuff. It makes me wonder, and I'm going to sound like an asshole and plug my book again, but
go ahead. It's your show. Plug your book.
Sacrifice Magic Behind the Mic. That's a key foundational element to my theory on why the hip hop music scene is, into all this occult symbolism. And I wish I would have talked to you before I published this thing, but yeah, I mean, if Hitler was doing this stuff, and obviously it worked, then because my hypothesis is that these rappers are basically taking occult practices that people like Aleister Crowley did, and they evoke different spirits and deities in order to put on a performance. And Hitler could have very easily been doing that, like you were kind of, hinting at. Maybe he did that.
Mm-hmm.
And none of this is out of the realm of possibility.
No, not at all.
Hitler knew how important symbolism was. He would flood whenever they would do some kind of parade or whatever. They would put out up to 30,000 swastikas
yep.
on the street. And, mm-hmm. you know, that shows the importance of symbolism. I mean, he got these people to do the most atrocious acts in the history of humanity
mm-hmm.
based on symbolism and, you know, potentially evocation of spirits.
Yeah, he was one of the first people to recognize the power of a symbol and to basically, you know, trademark a symbol, you know. And a swastika has been around a long time before the Nazis got hold of it. He just, it's supposed to be a good luck symbol. It's a form of a cross. It's a crooked cross. And he took it and kind of skewed it and turned it into, you know, the symbol for, people think, oh, it's the symbol of evil. It's not necessarily the symbol of evil. It was, you know, just what he wanted the symbol for the National Socialist Party to be. And because they turned into Nazis and Nazis is associated with something that was bad. Now all of a sudden you see a swastika, you think, oh my God, that's the most horrible thing ever. And people get offended. Well, it's a freaking cross, dude. It's not supposed to be, it's what you make of it, you know?
Yeah. It all goes into like kind of satanic stuff mm-hmm. where, you know, you take a symbol, which I think it was like a Hindu peaceful type symbol, and they inverted it the other way and,
yep.
mm-hmm. and now something else. And going off of that a little bit more,
it's facing left. They call it the left-facing cross. The Nazi swastika symbol, they call it the left-facing cross. So what does that tell you about some of your occult stuff?
Hmm? Oh, okay. Yeah, because like the occult people, they call it going down the left-hand path
mm-hmm.
when you, take that route to go towards the occult beliefs. And yeah, that's kind of strange. I never heard that before.
Yep.
What about... So what I was going to say is, like, so the imagery of a skull, you know, nowadays you see, you know, shirts that trick in Walmart with skulls all over. I mean, there's like this whole death obsession with our culture and
yeah.
this dark imagery of a skull. And, you know, this is more support for the idea that there is a fourth Reich working behind the scenes, because
mm-hmm.
as far as I know, the Nazis were one of the first people to, you know, use a skull imagery on their patches mm-hmm. or their uniform or whatever. And I mean, we, you know, look how prevalent it is today. You don't
yeah.
think twice when you see some jacked up truck with a giant skull sticker or something, you know?
Well, Isaac, could the Nazi Fourth Reich that exists in the shadows, could that be your Illuminati group that you keep talking about so much?
Yeah, very well could be. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And,
I mean,
another weird aspect of this is, okay, so millions of Jewish people were burnt, murdered,
mm-hmm.
and the word they used, like, who came up with this word of the Holocaust? Because if you look up the definition of the word Holocaust, it's like a ritual burning, and I'm thinking, like, if I'm a Jewish person or whatever, or if I'm a history book writer or whoever coined this term, like, it seemed a little almost disrespectful to call it a Holocaust versus
yeah.
just calling it a genocide.
Yeah, I don't know who decided to call it a Holocaust, and I've often wondered if it didn't have something to do with the fact that, the Nazis had these mass graves for the people that they gassed in the chamber or shot or whatever, and you know, oftentimes they would pour diesel fuel or whatever on it and just burn it. So I wonder if that didn't have, if that's not some sort of, you know, where the word Holocaust came from to be, you know, with this whole act of genocide. Because you're right, that's what it was. It was genocide, plain and simple. I mean, you know.
And the Nazis also were the ones that brought the symbolism of the lightning bolt, because in conspiracy circles they talk about how the lightning bolt is a symbol of, it represents Satan, because they said Satan fell like lightning, or in the Bible, I guess it's
right,
you know, that Lucifer fell like lightning, or there's some questionability as to whether the Bible is referencing Satan or not, but that's,
I believe the word Lucifer means light bearer, I think is what the word Lucifer actually means. So
yeah, and you know, you see lightning bolts on all sorts of things. Now they were on the SS bolts on the patches that the SS soldiers would wear, but then you see them on current, you know, even US military patches, they have lightning bolts sometimes,
mm-hmm.
depending on, you know, what MOS you are or whatever, but then you've got, you know, even on The Walking Dead, the bike Daryl rides around and has that.
It does, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I've always wondered why that is. Did they cover that in the storyline? I've never read the comics. I don't know, but like I always thought it was kind of weird. I'm like, why are they, you know, it's not much, it is no different than Daryl riding around on a bike with a swastika on it. Like, how is that? I don't know. It just seems strange to me that we're being subjected to that, you know?
Yeah. I've thought about that because I don't remember where he got the bike from. I don't know if he had it before everything happened or if he picked it up along the way. But I've often wondered, why the hell do they have SS on this bike?
Yeah, it's just the weirdest thing. Anyways, yeah, one of these days I'll look into it. But I'm going to wrap this up real quick here. So
sure.
Why don't you give us one last plug of where we can find your work or where you want the listener to go to next if they want to hear more.
All right. Well, you can hear my podcast. It's called Parareality Radio. You can hear it on Spreaker.com. That's Spreaker, Spreaker.com. Just look for Parareality Radio on Spreaker. Or you can go to my website, which is www.parareality.com. When you look on the homepage, you will see the most current show, and then there are tabs up at the top, and you can click on the show archive page, and you can be taken to where basically it houses all of my archives from a lot of my past shows. I don't have every single episode that I've ever done up there, but I've got a lot of them. You can hear past shows from Spreaker. You can hear past shows from whenever I was broadcasting with the Live 365. And for a while, I did a stint on terrestrial radio here in Nashville, Tennessee. And I have some, not all, but some of my shows when I was with WRFN here in right side. That was actually right outside of Nashville, Tennessee. So I have quite a good archive going up there. And I broadcast a new episode the first Monday of every month at 8 o'clock p.m. Central Time. And it is available for download or for, you know, streaming from 8 o'clock the first Monday of every month all the way on for the remainder of the month. And then it'll go into my archives after that. So that's how you can listen to the show. Or you can, if you're on Facebook, you want to look me up on Facebook. It's sandman.parareality on Facebook. I also post the shows up there as well. And you can friend me on Facebook. And when you send me a friend request, you know, just let me know you heard it here on your podcast here, Isaac. What do you call it? It's a big, long name, Conspiracy Theory. And
this is another example of not thinking it through. But yeah, the whole name of the podcast is Conspiracy Theories and Unpopular Culture.
Okay.
Just to let everybody know, Sandman Parareality Reality Radio Show is of much higher quality than mine. So don't, you know, I think I've got a group of hardcores that listen to my podcast, and God bless them for it. But yeah, this is, you know, if you want to hear a much better quality show, more well thought out, and ours is more of a kind of a grab ass kind of thing. But yeah,
hey man,
check out Parareality Radio. It's good quality stuff. You can check out all kinds of stuff. I'm gonna actually, what I'll do is I'll post a bunch of links up on the website on the post for this show.
Sure.
That way, if you know someone out there, if you're driving your car or whatever, or at the gym, and you don't want to fumble through trying to find the information again, I'll try to post as many links as I can for you.
Sure.
You can get on the Parareality Radio website, the links for Spreaker, the links for your Facebook, that kind of stuff. So.
All right. Appreciate that, Isaac. And thank you for the kind words, too, and everything you said. I appreciate you having me on the show. And by the way, those of you who are listening to Conspiracy Theories and Unpopular Culture, Isaac Weishaupt right here is my latest guest on Parareality Radio. So you can hear his interview by just going to parareality.com. And
And I'll be plugging that all over the website too. So be sure to check out IlluminatiWatcher.com, and you can find that stuff. And you know, one last thing is I definitely want to get back together on another show with
Sandman. Yeah,
you're also kind of an expert on chemtrails, so we'll be sure to mash that out, because I'm more of on the skeptical side of the chemtrail spectrum, mm-hmm. which is ironic. So yeah,
yeah,
you gotta look out for that, everybody.
That is ironic coming from you. It is ironic coming from you.
Yeah. So, cool. Well, hey, man, thanks again. I appreciate you coming on the show.
Yes, sir. I appreciate you having me. And whenever you get ready to talk about some chemtrails, buddy, you let me know, because I will talk your ear off about some damn chemtrails.
Hell yeah, let's do it. All right, cool.
All right, we'll make it. All right,
well, thanks, everybody. One more time, that was Sam Mann at Parareality Radio. Be sure to check out the, I'll have the links posted up on IlluminatiWatcher.com. He'll have, you know, the interview he did with me on his website and on his Spreaker channel. So check all that out. You know, thanks.
Parareality.com. Appreciate it, Isaac. All we'll talk to you later, man.
All right, sounds good.
All right.
We'll see ya.
Bye.
What does it mean to be a leader in cancer care? At Davis Hospital Cancer Center, we know. It means a team of experts providing exceptional care using advanced technology and treatment plans designed specifically for each of our patients. And our nurse patient navigators are here to make your experience convenient and comfortable. To find out how our expert team could help you, contact us at davishospital.org. The Cancer Center at Davis Hospital and Medical Center, a Steward Family Hospital in partnership with physician owners. What does it mean to be a leader in cancer care? At Davis Hospital Cancer Center, we know. It means a team of experts providing exceptional care using advanced technology and treatment plans designed specifically for each of our patients. And our nurse patient navigators are here to make your experience convenient and comfortable. To find out how our expert team could help you, contact us at davishospital.org. The Cancer Center at Davis Hospital and Medical Center, a Steward Family Hospital in partnership with physician owners.